This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
Thank you for downloading this edition of The Book That Changed Me. In this programme, actor and theatre director Simon McBurney talks about And Our Faces, My Heart, Brief as Photos by John Berger.
Outside my house, I can hear someone being murdered. I push the blinds aside. My children are in the next room. In the street below, two figures are at one another's throats. Foxes, standing four legs against each other, screaming. They drop, they circle, they attack, bite, and then chase one another out into the dark. Immigrants, exiled. They divide the tarmac territory, the brick and dustbins, and occupy it without fear. They are utterly at home. I have rarely felt at home, anywhere. 20 years ago I stood in a bookshop. Partly as a consequence of the words, "I don't love you any more," I felt particularly homeless. I picked up a slim volume by John Berger entitled And Our Faces, My Heart, Brief as Photos. At the time I was trying to make a piece of theatre about memory, and the task facing me was to reconcile ideas that appeared a heap of unrelated fragments. A man found in the ice on the Austro-Hungarian border in 1991 who turned out to be 5,000 years old, the biochemistry of synaptic exchange, identity, trains, passports, time, love, death, my father, my father's death. The book fell open at a page with a quotation from Novalis, the 18th century poet, mystic, and German romantic philosopher. All philosophy is really homesickness. It is the urge to be at home everywhere. I flipped the pages and read on. Page 89. The opposite of to love is not to hate, but to separate. If love and hate have something in common, it is because, in both cases, their energy is that of bringing and holding together the lover with the loved, the one who hates with the hated. Both passions are tested by separation. As soon as space and separateness is the condition of existence, love contests this separation. Love aims to close all distance. Death achieves the same end. Yet whereas love celebrates the unique, the unrepeatable, death destroys them. I paid and slipped the book into my pocket. I was born in Cambridge and grew up surrounded by artefacts of human origins. My father was an archaeologist, his subject the origins of man. But as a child, I was constantly disorientated by this question of home. Was I an East Anglian, I wondered, as a small boy skating ineptly over the cold, frozen fens in winter. Neither my father, who was American, nor my mother, part Irish, part Scottish, was from that flat, bleak country, which we referred to as home. When my father died, I fled Britain to live and study in Paris, then for years became a nomad, touring theatre all over the world. Restlessness was part of the work we made. The connection with audiences, not just in theatres, but in schools and even prisons, shaped the meaning of each piece we travelled with. I remember in a Población, a vast shantytown of migrant workers in Pinochet's Chile, we performed in the street to an audience of unemployed men and their families. Their homes, more precarious than anything I had ever seen, were, paradoxically, imbued with a sense of permanence that inspired awe. Before we performed, we ate a meal together, prepared by women, who insisted that we listen to what they had to say. They explained how they lived and why everything was shared, the rice, the opposition to the tyranny they were living under, their memories, their stories. As they spoke, it became clear their homes were not corrugated roofs, but an act of protest, a tangible refusal to disappear. Page 54. Never before our time have so many people been uprooted. Emigration, forced or chosen across national frontiers or from village to metropolis, is the quintessential experience of our time. Why add more words? To whisper for that which has been lost. Not out of nostalgia, but because it is on the site of loss that hopes are born. The mortar that holds the improvised home together, even for a child, is memory. For the displaced, home is no longer a dwelling, but the untold story of a life being lived. The untold story. Storytelling is my profession, how I make sense of the world. But what this slender paperback did was to reveal how things are connected. It showed me that the unrelated detritus of experience, abandoned fragments that seem as futile and hope-destroying as a landfill, could form a creative site on which you could excavate all that is possible. Throughout, Berger, with great beauty and economy, links and joins seemingly disparate ideas. These conjunctions are like bones, the vertebrae of the book's invisible spine, and he begins by examining the essential qualities of all stories, time. Page 8. We are both storytellers. Lying on our backs, we look up at the night sky. Those who first invented and then named the constellations were storytellers. Tracing an imaginary line between a cluster of stars gave them an image and an identity. Imagining the constellations did not, of course, change the stars, nor did it change the black emptiness that surrounds them. What it changed was the way people read the night sky. And the problem of time is like the darkness of the sky. Every event is inscribed in its own time. Events may cluster and their times overlap, but the time in common between events does not extend beyond the clustering. A famine, for example, is a cluster of events to which the great plough is indifferent, existing as it does in another time. With the book in my pocket, 20 years ago, I entered the rehearsal room revitalized. Perhaps the best way was simply to let the different stories coexist all in their different times. Let the audience create their own connections. Just as we make our own connections when we remember. And memory itself is, as we now know, not a complete thing waiting to be downloaded at the appropriate moment like a computer. It is literally made anew each time we remember. Memory is imagination. Page 72. For an animal, its natural environment and habitat are a given. For man, despite the faith of the empiricists, reality is not a given. It has to be continually sought out, held, I am tempted to say, salvaged. One is taught to oppose the real to the imaginary, as though the first were always at hand and the second distant, far away. This opposition is false. Events are always to hand, but the coherence of these events, which is what one means by reality, is an imaginative construct. An audience must be engaged in a story. It has to touch their lives. Yet on stage, what we see is not real. And paradoxically, the clearer the imaginative construct, the more real the piece can become. Which is why poetry, not just verbal poetry, but the poetic conjunction of what we see is essential in the theatre. Berger suggests that the quality of poetry is active. It listens. Page 21. Poems, even when narrative, do not resemble stories. All stories are about battles which end in victory or defeat. Everything moves towards the end when the outcome will be known. Poems, regardless of any outcome, cross the battlefields, tending the wounded, listening to the wild monologues of the triumphant or the fearful. They bring a kind of peace. Not by anesthesia or easy reassurance, but by recognition and the promise that what has been experienced cannot disappear as if it had never been. The promise is that language has acknowledged, has given shelter to the experience that demanded, that cried out. What were they? Asked my daughter. Foxes. Foxes. Her eyes enlarge as she looks at her brother. Tell us a story, they ask. The story will, I know, prepare them for the night ahead, protect them against fear, the dark, and become a gateway into their dreams. But it is not the words only. It is also the position of their heads on my shoulders, the place of the blanket, the light, my tone of voice. Everything is part of the story. For them, the world is made of stories. As we get older, we believe the world is different. We open a gap between the imaginative and what we call real. Page 31. The inability to remember is itself perhaps a memory. Once, in early childhood, we lived with the experience of namelessness. There were certain elemental forces, heat, cold, pain, sweetness, which were recognisable, as also a few persons. But there were no verbs and no nouns. Even the first pronoun was a growing conviction rather than a fact. And because of this lack, memories did not exist. Once one lived in a seamless experience of wordlessness. Wordlessness means that everything is continuous. So the later dream of an ideal language, a language which says all simultaneously, perhaps begins with this memory of a state without memories. Outside, the foxes are quiet now. My children and my wife are sleeping. I stand looking at them. If my mother and father could see them now, what would they say? Love's opposite is not hate, but separation, and death separates eternally. It is an unbridgeable gap. My father, as an archaeologist, knew about bridging gaps. There were bones he dug which were more fragile than the earth that surrounded them. Shards of flint were reassembled which revealed the truth about our past and joined us with it. This is what this book does. It joins. The local to the universal, the immediate to the distant, the living to the dead. Berger's tools are words. He digs in the vulnerable earth of human experience and joins the fragments he uncovers with an eye as sure as an astronomer, a gesture as gentle as a carpenter, and at the end of this book he makes a promise, like a roof. A promise that is perhaps indistinguishable from the promise of poetry itself. That language has acknowledged, has given shelter to the experience which cried out. Page 101. What reconciles me to my own death more than anything else is the image of a place. A place where your bones and mine are buried, thrown, uncovered together. They are strewn there pell-mell. One of your ribs leans against my skull, a metacarpal of my left hand lies inside your pelvis, against my broken ribs your breast, like a flower. The 100 bones of our feet are scattered like gravel. It is strange that this image of our proximity, concerning as it does mere phosphate of calcium, should bestow a sense of peace. Yet it does. With you, I can imagine a place where to be phosphate of calcium is enough.
The book that changed me was presented by Simon McBurney. The producer was Smita Patel. The next programme is presented by Children's Laureate Mallory Blackman.